one group of Greek text. The other group would be, it would be that much different. You just can't, just once in a while you'll see a verse, a portion of a verse, a word that's missing. Now I know we can make a big kerfluffle about that. Many people do. But we're going to make a kerfluffle in your life today because you're going to find that there are things that you have to at least understand when you read other versions. So I'm actually trying to help you understand and not just be right or be wrong. I'm not interested in the right and wrong question. Last week we talked about the translators. We talked about three issues. All translations and translators have bias. Did we talk about that last week? When I said all, I meant yes. The King James bias is well known, which is its genius. What is its fundamental bias? They were going to protect the language of the Church of England. So you're going to find any time when it comes to words like diakonos, servant, they're going to put the word deacon there. Why? Because deacon, Jim, what is a deacon in an Anglican church? Same as in a Catholic church. What is it? It's a man in training. So if you're a deacon in a Catholic church or in an Anglican church, a deacon is someone in training to become a priest or a pastor. Did you know this? What's a deacon in the New Testament? A servant. And actually, it should just be translated servant, especially since Jesus says the deacon is the greatest of all. So you have bias. I talked about also their ability, and in the notes, it's in the bottom of the older notes. If you just have today's, it's in the top. I say the actual process of translations, of how they actually did their work. Bibles International, from my perspective, the people we support Troy Manning. He'll be here next Sunday. Lord willing, I might have him teach on some of this. But Troy will take you into places you don't want to go in about a half a second's the problem. Because this guy, you know, he works in this every day. But my point is this, friend, how do you do a translation? Now, I asked a question last week. I know Jim has. How many of the rest of you have been in a place where you spoke in public and someone translated you? How does it work? Oh, really? Was it in Japanese? Translation is not easy. Did you know that? Now, if you're just translating a sermon, the only thing I do if I go into a place of translation, I want to have two things for the person translating. The main ideas, points. Because, friend, Pastor Warren has a philosophy. Dada's not here. Most of you haven't heard this because I don't teach homiletics to you. My main point about points is this. If your point doesn't make a point, what's your point? And if you make a very specific point, you know, meaning something that people need to grab intuitively, and the guy takes three paragraphs to give that point, what happens? Everybody's asleep. Oh, it's bad. Translation is very difficult work, especially when you start getting precise. The translation philosophy of Bibles International, I'll let Troy explain, but I will say it's very, very good. I'll just say this and we'll move on because I want to go to the philosophy of translation this morning. I say, what is needed in a good translation process? Well, first of all, it takes a group. Would you say that's a fair thing? You never want to do translation alone. Even the great translators, Adoniram Judson did the work himself, but he was conversing with all of the educated people in Burma. So it wasn't that he was doing the work himself, but he was working with them in how does it sound, how does it mean, how does it work. Can I ask a question? My mother had more weird words than anybody I know. I think it was country talk. When I got married, I found out there was a thing called a couch. So far, and all of you, I know all those words, but we didn't use any of them. My mother used Devonette. Lord only knows where that comes from. And for all of you, what, Steve? Come on, Steve. I'm going to separate you. Further. I don't know where the word comes from. Vaughn, you knew the word. I never hear anybody ever say, go over and sit on the divanette. My mom would always say that. She had lots of weird words. She couldn't pronounce some words. And of course, if you're old like Frenchie, he probably has one in his basement. Would you go get me something to drink out of the icebox? Now that sticks around, but most of us in this room, did anybody, Frenchie did, but anybody else use an icebox? See, my parents would have used one, an actual icebox. But that's what we do. And I still have to be careful every once in a while when I'm talking to people because I switch back to mom speak. And I go into icebox, and it's like the ice who? Well, because that was probably the kind she had, the first one. First one. That's like in the Philippines. They call everything, what's Kleenex? Is it Kleenex? Colgate. Yeah, there's certain, because that's the thing you had. Yeah. Yeah, everything's... My brother says sody pop. Now, hold on, folks. Do you understand the point I'm making? If I talk around this room and we're just going to translate one sentence, you don't want to throw the word definite in for couch when I'm the only one that uses that word. That's the problem. You can put in a totally word, totally normal to you, and everybody's going... Yeah, there are differences even of you. So you have a group that always helps. You have a group with good leadership. It's very important to have good leadership. Otherwise, it's not a bunch of boys that don't have anything else to do that sit down and said, let's translate the Bible. You have to have some leadership. They have to be interacting, which the King James, when you can read it in your notes, they had a process set up that was very interactive, where they had three different locations. I think Oxford, Cambridge, and Westminster. I can't remember. To me, it's not really important in one sense, but they had a group in three locations, and groups in all three locations that were assigned specific portions, and they interacted, and then they were supposed to send these back and forth, and we're not sure how much of that was done totally, but it was a group process with good leadership interacting was the idea. That way, you kind of correct each other. Debbie, you just said something. Things are regional. Even in America, English is not one language. It's regional. Frenchie has, he's very old, but you've lost all that weird. You would have had to have all that weird accent about East. Is it, for us, weird, excuse me. Nothing wrong with it, but it's unique. I talked to a guy from Boston one time that said the word water. I could not. It was more like woulda or something. It was like, I didn't know what he kept saying. He just kept saying, and I'm like, I don't know what you're saying. Regional dialects. Ronder. Yes, certain parts of the country will end something on an R like that. Then there's the Chicago brogue, which I can't do. All right, in your notes, it ought to be peer-reviewed, obviously, among peers, and it also has to be popularly reviewed because you can't just have eggheads translating because eggheads know words that normal humans have never heard of. I sometimes wonder if the King James did enough of this when it came out with concupiscence. Do you know the difference between, everybody look at me, do you know the difference between lust and concupiscence? One is a good Anglo-Saxon word and the other one is Latin-based. Every time I see concupiscence, I think, who thought of putting that word in the Bible? Concupiscence. It means lust, friend. That's all it means. Passions. Concupiscence. Yes, because it was meant to be read to the public. But the problem is England still has great regional variation. You know, you hear an accent and you say, oh, that's British. I wonder if the average person in this room, including me, and I know a little bit, do you know the difference between a Welsh and an Irish accent? They do. Instantly. You're not from here. And Jenny, do you remember when I read the Bible down in Devon? Not Devon, by the way, Devon. I read the Bible in church and I had people come up to afterwards saying, I really like the way you sound. Because our accent's interesting to them. Whereas for us, if you hear a British accent, especially doing formal language, everybody goes, oh, wow, that's neat. No, to them, they want to hear us. Okay, we'll move on from that. Does everybody understand? That's what makes a good translation. So you have to have peer-reviewed of educated people, and then you have to put it out there more or less, not for the uneducated, Rhonda, because you couldn't go to England and do a translation for the Cockney. I mean, that's too low class. And by the way, that's the kind of language that's always morphing. Like, you know, like. Dial the like off. Number next. We now enter translation philosophy. Translation philosophy is something that if you did any translation before 1970s, there was only one translation philosophy. The first Bible with a different translation philosophy was the NIV in a major translation. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to write this on the board. I actually read about 600 pages on this subject 2 weeks ago. I told Tim I'm going to commit suicide if I read any more of that stuff. And you know it's true. I got so many books on this, and after a while, it's like, I'm going to try to make this simple and helpful for you. Because this is what I want. I've already asked you to read the Bible in more than one translation. But what I want to do today is for you to understand that does have impact. So it's not like I think the King James is better or worse. I think the King James is much better than most modern translations in some ways. For instance, I read a text, Genesis. Tom, we did it Wednesday night. We were reading about Esau and Jacob. And I might preach on the next few weeks that passage that says he said in his heart. Now, when the King James says he said in his heart, this is what you know. The Hebrew is going to say he said in his heart. If the NIV translates it, you're not going to know what the original says. And forgive me, the ESV is better, but only slightly better. Now, I'm going to explain why, and the benefits of what we're going to do today and maybe next week is say there's benefits of both sides, okay? So in your notes, translation philosophy. This is important. Now, this is something that I have changed on in my lifetime, so you don't know. I think in the last 24 years, having been here, my whole view of this has changed. I still believe one version is better for accuracy, one way of translation. But I've come to realize with our levels of education and English acquisition, we have to move around from right and wrong questions to good for what questions. All right, in your notes. This is important, but should be understood, at least from my understanding, positively. And maybe more importantly, practically. So I want us to look at this not as this is good, this is of the devil. This is right. This is wrong. I want us to look at this more as there's a practical side to this that I think I can help you with. It's helped me even in this area. And of course, I say in English, Nancy, in French, I am sure you don't have as many translations as we do, but French has lots of translations. Spanish is going to have lots of translations. What's not going to have lots of translations is any small version, or small language, I mean. If you have a language like Maya from Mexico, you might have one translation. If you have two, it's a miracle. English has too many translations. You do know that. Have you ever tried to keep track of them? There's pages. pages of English translations. So we actually have too many. All right, in your notes, let's start with basic concepts. There is a continuum of ideas of how we look at translation from one side called dynamic equivalency. It's called dynamic. It has other names. Sometimes they call it functional equivalency. And this is the newer way of translation. It comes out of specifically linguistics, and it comes out of very specifically linguistics from cultures that are not oriented to Europe or that have no basis in the language of Europe, the Middle East. So countries that have small languages, and you have them all over the world, that are so different. So they started to find out it was very hard to translate in the traditional way. The traditional way is called formal equivalence. I'm not going to write the whole word. Another way of saying that, if those words are too large or too big or too whatever, and that's fine, is you can do it this way. This is basically translating like this: thought for thought. Okay? You're translating the thoughts of Scripture. Whereas the King James, obviously the King James, New American Standard, and a few others, is much more word for word. Now, you'll notice I have what's called a continuum, because translations fall out somewhere between these two always. We have many people here, at least quite a few, that speak more than one language. The moment you do any language work, you quickly realize something. With exception of European languages coming from many of the same roots, you can almost do word for word much of the time. But if you get outside of that root, that base, it becomes much more difficult. So, how do you express? Cliffy, I'm going to ask Cliffy, because you look intelligent this morning. I'm not going to have you read yet. I'm going to ask you a question. If you called somebody thin-skinned, what word would you use? In Tagalog, not in Cebuano. Is it different in Cebuano? What do you do in Cebuano? Go ahead. You don't know what you do. What? And what does that mean? Easy to get offended. So you wouldn't even use thin skin. But in Tagalog, Dave, Balat Subuyas, onion skinned. You're onion skinned. No, he's not. He's thick skinned. He is Bayat Carabao. He's skin the thick of a Carabao. Yes. But you also have little slightly different meanings for those. Because to call someone thick skinned in one context would be good, but it could also be bad. Because it also means you don't have any sympathy or feeling for people. Yeah. Yes? So when you start translating these things, if you have a Bible, let's look at one that's a funny one. I haven't looked it up, but I think I can spell it. It's 2 John, please. Second John, I don't know the verse. It's down towards the bottom. Pastor Kwok, do you have it down towards the bottom? What's the last, second to last verse say? And it translates that phrase face to face. Now, Greek doesn't say face to face. It says stoma prostoma, mouth to mouth. Modern translations, Gail, what's the ESV say? Does it say face-to-face? Well, what does it really mean? In person. Yeah, it means in person, eye-to-eye, face-to-face. Don't go stoma-prostoma on me. Please. Please. Now, this morning I told Michelle last week I was going to pick on her. I'm not going to pick on her, actually. You're going to find out that this young lady here, the Hebrew word is Eric Epanim. Neem is always plural. It's a masculine plural, I am. She is a person that has a long noses. Not nose, noses. And that's a very good thing. Did you know that? You not only have a long nose, you have a long noses. And you say, what does that mean? We'll get to that in a minute. And Michelle's thinking, is my nose that bad? In Hebrew, that's a compliment, friend. That's a really good thing. If you have a short nose, that's not good. All right, let's continue reading here. Does anybody have any questions about this? Now, let's do this, friend. As you see this, and please hear me, I could put them on either end. It's not important which is on which end. Do you understand? We're just simply saying there is a spread of use from a real formal word for word, which, by the way, when you translate, you prefer to more or less translate the words as much as possible. Yes. And on the other hand, thought for thought. And you say, I'm not going to go to every translation known to mankind. And an extreme view would be what you would get on the formal equivalence or the word for word. The extreme would be an interlinear. Have you all seen an interlinear where they have Greek and Hebrew and they have an interlinear and you read it, but the problem is it's not English? Because Greek and Hebrew both have, in English you normally start, Jenny, is it correct? You start normally with the subject, then you go to the verb, and then you go to the object. Well, in Hebrew, the normal pattern is verb, subject, object. You start with bara, then you go Elohim, God created, Hashemayim Ha'aretz. God created the heavens and the earth. So it's created God, the heavens and the earth. That's the normal process in Hebrew. In Greek, I don't know what normal anything is. They can have the subject at the end of the sentence because the spelling dictates how it's written. I mean, how it's understood. So Greek, so if you read an interlinear, you're like, you think you know something, but it's just the way they write and thought. So that's extreme. Mixed to that would be the ASV of 1901, which you would have to go looking for to find. The King James would be someplace here. New American Standard Version would be someplace here. ESV would be a couple notches removed. NIV is a couple notches removed farther. And then you go over here to paraphrase. Where it just kind of just says what they think it means in your English. The ideas, okay? Those are extreme. The Living Bible, New Living Translation, the Message, these are all over here on the extreme edge. Now, many pastors in the modern King James Only group will tell you those are of the devil, they're straight from hell and all that. So let's just stop. And when you came here, I bought you a parallel NIV King James, correct? Why? Frenchie, why? Why would I do that for her? Her English skills, though she read English well, did she read 1611 English? And the NIV is easier, much, much, much easier to read. Is it accurate on the whole? As long as you're not pushing the details. So instead, when it says he thought in his, it probably wouldn't say he thought in his heart. So let's do an example. Can we do an example? Everybody turn their Bibles to John 21. And Frenchie, I'm going to use you, so have your Bible open. I'm going to abuse you, actually, is a better word, because I'm going to ask you a hard question. You told me I could abuse you today, so I've been saving this up. All right, Pastor Kowak, read, please. I want everybody to read, and I don't care what version you're reading. I'm only going to have you note two things. Go.
Said unto them, Children, have ye any meat? They answered him, No. And he said unto them, Cast the net on the right side of the ship, and ye shall find. They cast therefore, and now they were not able to draw it, but only to the fishes.
And fishes, does that irritate you as an English speaker? I mean, it's just fishes. Even my mother wouldn't say fishes, okay? She'd say lots of improper English, but not fishes. Go ahead, Tim. That's good enough. The three words I want you to see, everybody ready, is the Sea of Tiberias. Frenchie, without reading your footnotes, what's the Sea of Tiberias? What is intuitively, what is it? Well, how would you know? Because you read the footnotes. Honestly, all right, well, how would you know? No other seas around. True. There's a dead fish in there. Mediterranean's kind of close. All right, so you see three words. Meat is just old King James English. And meat can mean anything that is chewable. You know, meat, you know, it's kind of like adult food as opposed to baby food. All right, they always use meat. It probably doesn't mean steak. Actually, they were eating fish. All right, who has the ESV? Cliffy, just read the same verses in ESV. Everybody, read with them. Thomas called the what? So we have removed Didymus, which is what the Greek text says. Is that bad or good? Didymus means twin. But it's also a proper name. Is it a big deal? I just want you to see modern translations are doing what? Please look at me. They're making things easier for you. But is easy always better? What does the text say? Didymus. This is the reason I'm a fan of multiple translations. Formal equivalents, if you don't like the King James, New American Standard, or the New King James. I like the ones in the middle, the ESV. But you have a difference right up front, and if you don't know, you can continue, sir. Now, by the way, I go fishing, which is kind of awkward English, means exactly as I am going fishing. There is no difference. I'm going fishing. We would say today, I'm going fishing. Go ahead.
Just as day was breaking, Jesus stood on the shore, and the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. And he said to them, Children, do you have any fish? They answered him.
We change it to fish, and fish is absolutely not in the Greek text. Did you hear the word? Absolutely not in the Greek text. And that's in the ESV. I didn't notice that one. So instead of saying meat, they say fish. Because they're going to the latter part, which does say fish. That's what they bring in. And Trent, it is what it is. Yes, sir. Well, but that's a distinction that only Duncan and people like you know about. I don't want to get into Duncan's definition of a boat and a ship. But I think in the ancient world, think about this, in 1611 England, they didn't quite have ships the size that we have. They would be boats compared to what we have. Yes, well, how do you do it, Jim? A boat is something, how do you? There. Okay, there you go. Now you got the naval definition. Go ahead.
Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped off of work and threw himself into the
That's good enough. We have lost now the word naked. And the ESV says strip. So we have four differences. Listen to me. None of them are a world of hurt. I just want you to understand, if a version starts taking on what's called functional equivalence or dynamic equivalence, and the farther it moves this way, the less it focuses on exact words. And ship and boat is just a matter of, you're a sailor, so you know the difference now. But, okay. Let's now go to the NIV. What? Now, no one's mad. I recommend the NIV, especially if your English is poor. And another reason we'll get to. But you could read it your whole life and not know. It is not the Sea of Galilee in Greek. It's the Sea of Tiberias. By the way, the Sea of Tiberias is only used in which book? The Gospel of John, thank you, which was written outside of the Promised Land, away from the Promised Land, and really didn't deal as much with Jewish people. So how would people in Rome have called the Sea of Galilee? After Emperor Tiberius. Got it? Now, the Old Testament calls the Sea of Galilee, Frenchie, because I'm going to see if you really know what you're talking about. No, you don't. Chinneret. Remember that? No. It's in there half a dozen times. You say, why? Well, sometimes things change. Yes or no? Actually, Galilee is something that happened during the time of the exile and after, where things split into Galilee in the north, Samaria, and then Judea. All right, so we have, now my point is, if you're reading this in the NIV, you have no idea, do you, that it even says Tiberias. So you don't have to think, and you don't have to make a choice. It has made that choice for you. Continue, sir. Going out to fish might be a little bit more thought for thought and a little bit, what do you call that? Colloquial. Maybe, I don't know. Sounds more, you know, more like a teenager. But anyhow, that's just me. Go ahead. And they do the same thing with the fish thing. Go ahead. So again, you have this issue of the King James says naked. What does the Greek say? Naked. Now, what have they done? There's no communist conspiracy. They have thought and assumed that it didn't mean naked. It meant he had just his inner garment on because he was working, it was hot. And then when he saw Jesus, he put on his outer garment. But here's your problem. It does not allow you to make that choice. It makes the choice. There you're starting to understand one of the issues. Are these life and death issues? But that you do have to be aware. So this is what I would say to you. See, I'm different than you. When I read the ESV every day, I have on my phone, which is where I read most of the time, the King James, New King James, which I never read, NIV, ESV, and the New Revised Standard, which I don't recommend you read. And I go back and forth on all those. But I have the original language. You don't. Here's your problem with all modern versions that are based progressively. The NIV is not extreme, and the ESV is much closer to the King James than the NIV. Even in the structuring, as for you that have been reading it a while, if you listen to the lilt, it actually has a similar lilt to the King James on purpose. I like it much better than the NIV. But I just wanted to show you what? There are changes made that you don't know are made, and you just don't know. Okay, Tim. Well, that's a bad one there, because it uses actually the word that doesn't have anything to do with friends. It has something to do with children, which should cause you to ask a question. Is that the normal way you would address a group of men? The answer is no. Yeah, now there's where, see, again, we keep pushing it further and further. Okay? All right, look in your notes, please. Let's go back to this. I think everybody's going to be able to understand this. I don't think this is beyond your ability to understand. So when you're reading different versions, understand you're going to run into different things. So a big piece of it, I erase, is the translation philosophy. Is it more word for word? Now, and again, Louis, the ship boat thing is probably more to do with how old the English is than it is the philosophy of translation. But both of the new modern versions translated, says it real simply in Greek, gumnos. I mean, it's just a word for naked. But Jesus was on the cross and he was naked too. Was he naked, naked? That's a question. I don't know. I do know this. They didn't mind humiliating people. So, yes. Yes. But they're interpreting the euphemism for you. And we don't know for sure. He could be. He had no clothes on. He certainly had enough. He had so. Why? Well, that I don't know. And nobody else knows either. But I do know this. He had enough clothes off that it would be shameful for him to see Jesus. And that's what's not going to come across in the other versions. Whether he was naked. Come on, folks. My daughter, my son, John, good to see you, hubba, have never seen me in a pair of shorts. Nor will they ever see me in a pair of shorts. You say, why? I want them to live, listen, I want them to live a happy life the rest of their life. I don't want John to have a tick. Yeah, you can't, I've seen your dad. That was one time too many. No, because I had my eyes closed after that. Let's quickly do some of these thoughts, may we? I say in your notes, no translation is absolutely, are you ready for this? Formal equivalence. Or if you want to just put down F-E, or word for word. There is no translation. That's not possible, friend. Do you know that? Why is that true? If it was possible, you wouldn't need to translate. It's just no translation is totally formal equivalence. Well, right, and that's, if you try it, you get an interlinear, which is no longer English. Now, we don't have a lot of time, so we're going to do this because I really want to say something to Michelle and her long nose. Nose is. Turn to the next page. We'll come back here next week. You got to go all the way to the bottom. Exodus 34. Now, if you're a country boy, which we have a lot of country people in this room, everybody find Exodus. By the way, if you have old notes, they're not in there. Sorry, I added this 2 weeks ago. Do me a favor, Tommy. Just grab some of the notes back there and give them the. There's just a section, folks, of verses only. That's all that's changed. Everybody look, it's Exodus 34. You find that verse in your notes? Forgive me, I did do this. Give one to Rhonda, give one to Jim, give one to everybody up here. You got enough for everybody right through here. You guys got the ones with the verses. Everybody ready for this? Now, you don't have to read Hebrew. I'm not asking you to read Hebrew. But in Hebrew, when it talks about God being long-suffering, it always says the same phrase, Erech Eponim, which Eponim is plural. He says he has noses. And Erech means long. Now, for you people that have action, and by the way, in this room, most of you, if you're honest, haven't been around this. I don't know why we have a problem with honesty sometimes in simple things. You didn't grow up on a farm for 18 years. You probably haven't experienced much of this. Have you ever been around a horse or a bull that's angry? Where does the anger first show up? And if you don't know, it shows up in their nose, the nostrils. City people go out and think bulls are tame. These are the same idiots that go to zoos and want to pet some lion or something. Folks, if you ever see a bull or a horse start snorting and the nostrils get big, they flare. Here's what you do. You better find a place to hide. And unfortunately, most of us in this room, many of you are too old or too weak to climb. And you can't outrun the thing. For some strange reason, in the Hebrew thinking, these are the verses. Anytime you have a plural, plural can mean more than one, but Hebrew doesn't have a lot of adjectives. So sometimes it means nose on steroids. It's like God is called El. He's also called plural, Elohim. That's called a plural of majesty. A superlative, yes, sir. So when it says, if I was to say to you, you have a very long noses, that would mean you're long-suffering. Because when an animal's noses flare, boom, they're coming after you. God can hold his anger a long time. How do you like that? Now, how do you translate that literally? The answer is, you do not. You translate that long-suffering, correct? That's the reason no translation is totally literal, right? And by the way, in any language, if I told you you were, what's the word for sibuyas? What's the first word? Balat sibuyas. You have onion skin. You're onion skin. Yeah, you're thinking smelly, or what are you thinking? You can peel it off. That means you're very easily, you're the opposite of what it means to be Erech Eponim. That's what it means. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this time. Bless our time together. Christ's name. We will cover much more next week.